Well, good morning, everybody. Please give me a thumbs up if you can hear me. I am doing this from the road today, thanks, producer Eric. Can you get Texas Toast up here? He's going to help out a little bit today, and I was unable to bring him up, so I'm not sure if he has to drop or come back down, or let's get him up here, though. But good morning, everybody, and you're tuning in to Bitcoin Veterans Spaces number 269. And again, I'm doing this from my vehicle, so I'm not actually looking at any show notes, so we'll see how this goes. But yeah, want to say good morning to everybody and thank you for listening to us. We do this each weekday, 10 a.m. Eastern, and hopefully my connection stays strong here while we do this. But my name is Bob Van Kirk. Yes, I'm fully doxxed, but not fully vexed. And I'm joined up with a few of our friends that join us frequently. We got Texas Toast, Neil, DFP, and producer Eric. I think we have Wade, too. There he is. Yeah, perfect. All right. So today is Monday, September 22nd, and this will be fun. I'm going to take a look at the time chain and hopefully this is up to date. But we are at block height number 915,878 with the Bitcoin price just under $113,000, which means you can still pick up 886 sats for each US dollar. Couple of announcements. As we've been talking about, we're going to have the second annual summit for the Bitcoin veterans. That's going to take place November 10th and 11th in beautiful Nashville, Tennessee. And you're all invited. Please check out bitcoinveterans.org/summit2025. You can get your tickets there. And also sponsorships are live. If you would like to sponsor, please hit up that same URL, bitcoinveterans.org/summit2025, and you can get in on the fun and help the cause. All right. Also, if you're in the audience and you'd like to come up and speak or argue with us, please hit that microphone in the bottom left. Otherwise, you can use the purple pill in the bottom right to give us your comments, questions, funny memes, or snide remarks. But we'll try to be nice to you if it's your first time. If it's, you know, more than your first time, then, it's all fair game. So with that, want to go around the horn. Hopefully that came through clear and I didn't mess it up too much. Good morning, Texas Toast. How are you?
Good morning. I'm just sitting on the edge of my seat waiting for Dennis Porter's breaking news. Bitcoin, it's going to change the game for Bitcoin forever tomorrow. Something coming out of California. We really don't know the details. We're all just waiting and seeing if he'll save our bags or not. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I'm ready for the protest to get started. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. Wade, good morning, sir. How are you?
Morning, Bob. Hope you're driving safe, man. Just some interesting, you know, market action this Sunday. And I was kind of wondering what the group's thoughts might be on the mergers and acquisitions going on now.
Which mergers do we have?
Looks like Semler has been purchased.
Oh, Tim B, if you're out there, congratulations. No, that's, yeah, I mean, it's going to be more and more, especially if we get a little bit bigger dip. These treasury companies seem like they're struggling a little bit with direction. It's, you know, in my mind, it's like Bitcoin was always supposed to be a treasury asset for any company, but you have to be a productive company. And you just save your extra cash in it, just like you would have your extra cash in the bank. You know, that's how I do it with a couple of my companies, and, it's worked out really well. You don't have to worry about, really anything, because if you know what Bitcoin is, you can kind of, you understand the safety in it. And really, it's one of the, like, it's probably the safest play in the, wider crypto space. And you can just sit back and wait, and you're not on leverage. You don't have to worry about liquidations. You just be productive for society, save your excess cash, and then you're able to outperform your peers in whatever business you're operating in. So that's the way to go. I see every company, being in the future. Right now we're in this crazy space of, people trying to be first and riding the wave, and a lot of them are going to get wrecked. And, there's probably a coral reef down there where they will be shredded, and, you know, only a few will probably pop their heads back up after that. But I don't know. That's my thoughts on that. On the other, thoughts on the price action, like yesterday or in the last 12 hours, you know, it's just same old shit. It's people, seems like just a liquidation event, chasing liquidity. And then we'll just continue up from here. Gold, you know, gold was pumping really hard. It's like up 1% today. So, you know, I just see they're not stopping the money printing. We just got our first rate cut. There's probably going to be like two or three more. And especially if we get a black swan event, they might be really big, and we could, you know, any sort of black swan comes around, they're slamming rates back down to zero as fast as they can, especially once Powell is out. So it's like, in my mind, the money printer is just getting going. And, we know what happens with a scarce asset like Bitcoin when they print endlessly. So I'm not worried. I'm chilling. I'm stacking more, and I'm excited for like the next year, 2 years. I think it's going to be really good for price action.
Yeah, and for $1 billion liquidation event, the market looks really stable, really mature.
Yeah, I was seeing something about how it was basically the biggest one in like years for the time frame, but you hardly even notice. It's like, okay, we were here last week, right? It's like, who gives a shit? Just a little bit cheaper sats. And we're still above 100K, which is crazy that like all these, liquidation events are happening. And, you know, it seems like every week or every other week we have the biggest liquidation event in 5 years or whatever. And it's like, okay, we're at 113K. What's up? So I think it's just showing the maturity of the asset and really the holders. Really, it's the maturity of the holders and all these institutions that are using it for a legitimate treasury, having a long-term, outlook, just because of the nature of what these institutions and, you know, billionaires and the people that are buying it, they're not looking to sell it on a small gain. They see it as a hedge against, fiat debasement. They see it as akin to gold. They see it as a long-term treasury. And so it's like, you know, that I think that's where we're seeing that the price is not really, in my view, not going to take a big dip. But at the same time, depending on whatever scenario unfolds in the macro, has potential for huge upside and not a huge potential for downside, in my opinion. But good morning. We haven't really gone around the horn yet. I'll let Bob focus on the road. I know if he's near me, it's wet out there, and I saw some people spinning out. So we want him to focus on all the craziness out there. But we'll go around the horn. Say good morning to Pubby. How you doing?
Hey, good morning, guys. Yeah, like everything you said there, it's a great ride to see, just Bitcoin mature and grow and get stronger. And like you say, these events that happen now, which, you know, 5-6 years ago, would have really knocked people for a loop. Bitcoin just gets stronger. The people are more resilient. It barely, moves the meter. And you see words like plunged, you know, yeah, it drops 3,000 or 4,000 over 100,000. That's not plunging anymore. These are barely, you know, barely body blows. So it is just great to see. You know, it doesn't matter whales dump, what's going to happen. Look, whatever's happening to Bitcoin, it keeps coming back. And especially thanks to all the, you know, all the hodlers out there, that your conviction grows as Bitcoin grows. And it's nice to see.
Neil, good morning. Can anybody else hear Neil? I see you came off of mute, but I can't hear you.
I can't hear him.
Okay.
And all right, well, Bob dropped.
Yeah, Neil, go ahead and come down and come back up, and then we'll go over to BFP.
Hey, guys. Good morning. I got an anecdotal thing from the weekend about a 22-year-old person I met, and he just brought up Roth IRA, so I brought up Bitcoin, and he just dismissed Bitcoin. He said, oh, it's too volatile. That was the end of the conversation. He's in his fifth, he's going on to his fifth year of college, just completed his bachelor. And it just reminds me of how early. Here I am thinking he's a young kid. He would probably have more of an open mind to something like Bitcoin because he grew up in a digital age, kind of like my children are near that age. So we're early. I think XYZ, you know, we're talking about stocks, and I used to be a stock junkie until I found Bitcoin, and XYZ Block, Jack Dorsey's Cash App, Square, and all that, they're a quietly Bitcoin company, and they're quietly building just a beast of a company, and they get Bitcoin on a visceral level, I think. I mean, the PE multiple on that stock is it's normally valued. It's like a regular company that's just quietly building on the Bitcoin ecosystem. So that's one worth checking out.
Yeah. And you know, I've noticed the same thing with the younger generation, the Gen Z types. You know, you would think that they would intuitively get Bitcoin, and to a large extent they do. But I've seen a lot of this, the same thing where it's, they think they're too late, and you kind of like smash your head against the wall thinking, how can you think that? But, in this world that, well, they've seen everything pump and dump, and, you know, they see their friends and all this in the crypto verse getting massive gains. And that's probably the majority of what, you know, what anybody sees. They usually don't see all their losses or anything like that. But, and then Bitcoin,
well,
having these,
you think,
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. The volatility though, you know, when you're 22, that's what you want. You want to see volatility. You don't want to like a old fuddy duddy company. I would think you want to see some action. That's the whole point.
Yeah. I think it's worth some education, just, and like even chilling, you know, showing them how like Amazon and a lot of these giant companies of today, showing them, you know, okay, where was Amazon at 10 years into its existence? And it was one of the more volatile stocks as it's gone up. It had multiple like 50% plus retracements. And so I think that's like a good educational point for some of these people, that the younger generation, where, you know, if you see something, that you can understand its fundamental value and use case, you know, you have to be able to tune out price and volatility and think about the long term, because that's where you're going to see, you know, retirement level gains and life changing gains. It's never going to be in the short term. It's always going to be in the long term. And there's plenty of examples now that we have with these, especially with these tech companies. You can see that in history. So
Tesla's a good one.
Yep. Tesla's a great example too. Exactly. All right. Neil, do we have you?
I hope so. Yeah, this morning I was just thinking about, like, why am I even here in this space, dedicating my time and energy to this cause? And it's just like, I don't want to lose sight of the fact that, you know, fiat is evil. I hate the money printer because it extracts the value that I create in the world, and it's logically invalid. It can't survive unless it just continues to abuse us more and more. And I don't want to pass that on to my children. I don't want my children to have to deal with fiat world. I don't want them to have to deal with the central bank. So when you ask the question of, like, are you late? As long as there's a central bank, you are early. When the central bank is no more, you are on time. It's like, that's basically it. Like, that's where this goes. These two systems can't, like, coexist forever. Like, they're always gonna, the energy is gonna be transferred between them. And, that's why it's so important to learn about Bitcoin, because then you understand the economic physics, ethics, whatever you want to call it, like, to understand this energy transfer, which is happening from this, you know, this fiat unethical money into an ethical Bitcoin. So I don't know. I don't want to lose sight of that. That's why I'm here. And, that's why I continue to push this message and, to do these spaces and to talk to people, because pushing that message out, like rallying the troops, gathering the pitchforks, like, that's how we end the Fed. That's how we end central banking. And that's how, you know, we all can deliver, our progeny, a world free of the central bank.
Yeah. We want a future for our posterity. That's like, that's the whole thing. That's been the founding of this country, is just building a better place for our children, for our future. People come in for number go up most of the time, but then they usually stay once they realize the fundamentals of what it actually is and how it protects your purchasing power, and from the money printer over time. And then they also, stay for the revolutionary aspects of it and this kind of, like, moral good that it is. And so once they're in, it's like number go up is getting your foot in the door. But then what really makes you stay is, you know, seeing that it's a moral money and that our current system is totally immoral and needs to be destroyed, frankly. So I think, that's some great points you brought up, but we got Manimal on the stage. I think I've talked to you before, but I wanted to give you a chance to speak if you're on the mic.
What's going on, gents? Hey, so just kind of piggyback off what the last speaker said. So the way I think about it and the way I explain it to my kids, you know, we say things like the money printer and fiat, but if you really dig a little deeper into what those mean, like, when I hear money printer, I actually hear debt printer, because when they're printing money, they're actually printing debt. So I think the younger generation hasn't really connected those two dots, like, in a way that, like, when you really understand the way the current system works, yeah, they're printing money, but they're also printing debt at the same time. So the debt has to keep going up, which is why they have to keep printing money, because money is debt in the current system, which means that the taxes have to keep going up in order to keep the system alive, right? So they're getting squeezed. They don't really understand how and why they're getting squeezed. It's just, I think enough young people haven't really understood the value proposition of Bitcoin, because they haven't really truly understood how the structure of the system is robbing them on a daily basis. Because when they print money, and everybody knows they're going to print more and more money, they're simultaneously printing debt at the same time. So they're getting robbed. They just don't understand. They don't have a really good understanding of how they're going to rob. They know they're printing money. And we all know that at some point there's going to be a new trillion, 10 trillion, 20 trillion batch of money that's going to get printed. But we have to remember they're printing debt at the same time. So the debt goes up when the money goes up. And that's where the new, like the younger generation really has to like put the two together in order to understand the value proposition of a fixed supply asset like Bitcoin, a truly fixed supply asset, in a system where the money, yes, we all know the money has to go up, but it's because when they print money, they're printing debt, and that, and what that does to the system and how it robs everybody. That's how I explain it to my kids. And they've like over the last, you know, 2 or 3 years, especially, you know, I've got a 19-year-old and a 16-year-old. Once I explain to them that, you know, when you're working for your money, all that money is somebody giving you something for your time. And when you're young, you don't really understand like time value the way that older people do. Because when you're older, you know, you really start to understand that your time is fixed. And so like the younger that people understand that your time is the valuable asset, the most valuable asset in your life, and how they're stealing your time even at a young age, and how the system is set up to actually steal your time from you. I think that's where the younger generations are really gonna put the two together as far as the value proposition of Bitcoin and how this current system works. Yeah. I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, great comments. And I completely agree. But one of the issues that I think a lot of young people are having is, and I know I had this myself, it's really hard to grasp these concepts and like how they're fucking you when you aren't really working, you're not really paying taxes, you don't have a lot of, you know, expenses. And so you're not fully invested in society yet. You're just getting taught, basically. And so if you're under 25, you know, it feels like less and less young people are working as they're growing up. And so that makes it even harder to really understand, the impacts of money and saving and how, you know, that's getting harder and harder to do. And so, you know, I think it's really important as a father and as a teacher in society today to really, really drive those things home by getting your children involved in kind of the economy and getting them to work. It's a lesson in itself when they're working and paying for things and, you know, helping out with some of the duties of the household as they get older. But that's a lesson that's gonna really highlight, you know, us talking about all the inadequacies of the current system, in a way that I don't think it'd be really hard to grasp without that aspect. But Wade, I see your hand. Go ahead.
Yeah, the signal kind of for me, macro signal for me, was when Congress authorized the $42 trillion plus in deficit spending, that was the real signal. And when the current administration came in and they failed to take any corrective steps to remedy the overspending and just the profligate fraud, waste and abuse in the CHIPS and the Infrastructure and Jobs Act and the Anti-Inflation Reduction Act, there was trillions of dollars in government program offices that really had no destination where there was going to be, let's just say, efficient spending out there. And all of that money could have been returned to the Treasury. And when none of that money was returned to the Treasury, and then we authorized, you know, $41 trillion plus in deficit spending, that for me was the real signal that neutral reserve assets are going to reactively respond to the macro environment that we're in.
Word. Hey, Bob. Bob, you are in the matrix, brother. So we'll let you see if you can get to, what next time you get near a big city or a big town, hop back in. But Pubby, go ahead.
Yeah. No, great stuff, guys. Yeah, Bob. Sorry, man. In the matrix there. This is how crazy is getting with the printing and having to explain to your kids about inflation and the value of what things really are in the debasement. And I'm literally going through grocery stores. I made a tongue in joke thing a couple of weeks ago. Like, I'm looking at the price of things and I'm thinking, fuck, man, I better load up on some coffee now because that's going up 20% within a year. I'm looking at non-perishables as investment opportunities at this point. If we have things like you're looking at all the asset classes, but all they are, they're rising with inflation. So all that money you've been stocking away, like I was taught, be a good little boy, put it into your 401k, and you look at what the purchasing power is of what you're going to have. You're sold this bill of goods of, wow, look how much money you're going to have. Let's make it a round number. You're going to end up with $1 million in a retirement account after 40 years. And then you get there 40 years later and you find out your $1 million worth 100 grand in purchasing power. This is the kind of stuff that you're trying to teach your children. You know, they see the 1 million. It's the Bitcoiners that see the 100,000 and understand this is one of our better ways out of this damn mess.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I think of all the time, the show, I'm sure everybody remembers Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. and it's like today that seems like such a, and I was just like, wow, $1 million. That's crazy. And now that I'm like in the world, have some children, fully participating in the economy, paying taxes, I look at that and I'm just like, okay, if I had $1 million more today, my life basically wouldn't change. Maybe I could do an upgrade on my house, but, just the level of debasement, I think since that time is that really highlights it in my mind. So it's like, what's that level today? It's probably 10 million, you know? So in that short amount of time, I'm in my mid 30s. And it's like in that short amount of time, probably 15 years since that show was around, in any meaningful way, we've seen our purchasing power basically reduce, tenfold, or down to a tenth of what it was. That's something that's always sticks out in my mind is Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and, just how ridiculous, that is, and what clown world we live in now. But Neil, I see your hand. Go ahead.
Yeah. On that note, is my wife showed me, I don't know, she on her little TikTok or Twitter or something like that. Someone won $1 million and took like $1,000 a week payout instead of the lump sum. And it like, that kind of goes to show just like where people don't really understand that time value or like what's happening with the debasement. Like that taking a lump sum, taking the big tax haircut or whatever up front, but then being able to put that money, into a non-dollar asset, that's the play. You take this, drip, drip, drip forever to get your payout to save your quote unquote taxes. Now you're eating, just this full shot of debasement straight to the dome. Like that's, it's not even an,
Oh, you cut out there, but I hear you, that it's, and to me, it's like the system. I'm trying to get away from saying they, because then there's a lot of different connotations there, but the system almost needs everybody to be ignorant on this. There's a lot of great quotes from Ford or any of these other guys that basically say if people knew how the system worked, overnight there'd be a revolution. And, without the ignorance of the masses, the system doesn't work, which is a crazy thing to think. It's like in order for it to work, everybody has to be stupid and we have to keep them stupid, to how it really works. But yeah, go ahead. Oh, Manimal, you're cutting out as well. Wade, your hand. Go ahead.
Do you guys remember maybe a year, maybe 2 years ago, Lynn Alden was given a talk about how people in Argentina and her personal experience in Egypt was that they were hoarding building supplies, like bricks and building materials, so they could preserve their purchasing power. And we're literally sitting in here having a conversation about hoarding coffee over 1-2 year time periods. I mean, it leads me back to Robert from Infonomics was doing a month over month annualized U.S. debt prints. And it's gotten to the point now where we're starting to average $1 trillion quarterly prints. And it's $1 trillion quarterly prints in perpetuity going forward. And I just don't see how we just talk about, hey, you know, just us here sitting in the space, you know, a couple hundred thousand folks talking about our personal experiences. Yeah, we need to start hoarding coffee and building materials. I mean, that has to be directly attributable to the fact that we're doing $1 trillion quarterly prints going forward in perpetuity.
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, it's crazy to think that, you know, we're on starting to creep towards the level of these Turkeys and Argentinas and where everybody's thinking about, you know, I get a paycheck. I got to get rid of this dog shit toilet paper that they paid me in, because it's going to be worth less, if not next week, definitely next year. So I see Manimal, you back on stage.
Yeah. I was just going to say, why do you think that's the one subject they don't teach in school is money? Literally, it's the one thing that they don't teach in schools because they don't want you to know how the system works. So, you know, that's the, if there's one subject that every parent should teach their kids about, it is money, because they're definitely not learning it in school.
Well, and it's even worse than that. It's like when they do teach it, they're teaching, you know, the opposite of what it should be. They're teaching Keynesian economics. They're teaching, anybody that's going to university to get an economics degree is just learning the worst things you could learn, and like the total backwards nature of what the system really should be, or what a right system is. You know, you see this in Charlie Kirk. I saw an interview this last week, and I'd seen it before, but he's talking to this college kid about economics and like, okay, this kid's there for an economics degree, and he's asking, oh, okay, have you heard of Mises? Have you heard of any of these people? And he's like, yeah, I've heard of them, and I'm reading on my own. And he's like, are they teaching that? And he's like, no. And he names off a bunch of different Austrian economists, and the answer to every time is no, they're not teaching this. They're not teaching this. And so he's like, then you're not getting an education. You're getting an indoctrination. And, that's the,
but I'm talking about, you know, primary school education. I mean, primary school education is when kids should really start learning about money. You know what I mean? Like if we're waiting to teach 19, 20 year olds about money and what money and economics is, we're setting ourselves up for failure, especially in this kind of system.
Yeah. And,
like, you got to teach them young.
And we're getting to the, you know, this stuff snowballs. And as it rolls down the hill, you know, the rate of decay of the system seems to be getting faster and faster and faster. And that's true in education, where, you know, these classes and how you're teaching kids about different things, they just can't keep up at this point, especially the public schools. I mean, you know how hard it is to get curriculum through that pipe and into the children's heads. It's like, that's where I see, I'm like, there's no way I could send my kid to a public school unless it was my absolute, you know, only option. But, because they're not going to have the material. They're not going to have, the knowledge. So I think it's really up to the family to educate everybody. And if you can get them into a private institution that might be able to do a better job of keeping up with the times and kind of what should be taught, I think that's a really good option. But Bob, I see your hand there. I don't know if you're trying to come off or it's been up since you tried last time, but I'll give you a chance to talk if you want to.
Yeah, let's do a mic check and see if I can bring this hand down. Oh, you got me. Awesome. Well, we'll enjoy it while it lasts. But yeah, I see you guys have taken on to the space title. And so yeah, thanks for covering. But also, like, it is funny, like, when you think about it, how you know, we're like the super minority, but growing every day. And there are some people out there who are so tethered to the system that just by participating in it, they are perpetuating it. And so I really liked Neil's comments that I could hear. And yeah, continue the conversation. I'm about to get a little more rural, so I'll save the listener.
Thanks, Bob. All right, anybody else on this, because we can just keep rolling with this probably the whole show, so I don't mind doing that, because we don't have a ton of topics lined up, so if we want to keep rolling with this, no problem.
Oh man, hey, let's put the other double-edged sword into here called shrinkflation. Because you know what, I was like doing the grocery shopping, you know why? People leave me the fuck alone, I zone out, I can listen to podcast spaces. But hey, after going weekly, sometimes bi-weekly there, I know what sizes are. I know what packaging looks like. And it's funny because they put up the price only 5 or 10% and you shrink it 5 or 10%. There we go. Now we're getting down to the brass tacks of the 20% we're looking for. And there's a guy that actually, I got to find his website again. Cause he would do that with the packaging, and people don't believe when I said, yeah, a half gallon of ice cream used to have a half gallon of ice cream in it. I think it's down to like 0.375 or whatever. But there's a guy they took out, if you guys are familiar with the Toblerone chocolates, right? Set from Europe, Swiss Alps, and it's shaped like mountain ranges. he actually put pictures out. There's more space now between the mountains. It used to be this long triangular thing. It used to be really condensed with chocolate. Now, fuck, he measured it. They put more, there's more air between the ranges out there, between the mountains. That's how bad it's getting. So yeah, just keep an eye out for the packaging and the shrinkflation going on.
Yeah, my Cool Ranch Doritos.
Don't you think? Well, I was going to say, don't you think that, this is partially like just comes out of the pandemic where a lot of people shifted to ordering their groceries and, you know, all you're seeing is an app telling you like, hey, here's the product you want and here's the cost. But you're not there like actually evaluating whether or not the package still contains the same amount.
Yeah. And it's like people get into a rhythm and they, you know, if you're running a family, you kind of know this, you know, every week you've got kind of your lineup of different foods that, you know, your wife's preparing for dinner and you got their school lunches and you just kind of have a rotation. So you don't even really look at the price a little bit, but you just want the same thing over and over again. So you're just kind of chilling out. It's only after, you know, after either looking at the bill at the end of the month or as you're making it and kind of seeing it, be less and less that you can kind of realize what's happening, but most people aren't even going to realize. So that's why they're getting away with it, or they're able to get away with it. You know, that coupled with the money, and everything else. It's like we're in a fifth generation war. It's everything's a psychological operation. And, yeah, I think that's where we're at, but it's sad to see, but I miss the days of my Cool Ranch, Doritos, you know, having a full bag. Cause I opened one up the other day. I hadn't opened one up in, you know, 10 years. And I was like, I got like 4 chips. And then I was like, surely this is just the bag. And then I open up another one and, it's literally like you had to have 2 bags now for what, you know, used to buy one. So it's pretty wild.
I feel like at Costco, we used to be able to buy a rack of lamb for like $25 or something like that, even less. And now like went in the other day, bought a rack of lamb. And after post tariffs, they were like $36, $37 for a 2-pound rack of lamb. So it looks like all of the red meat now, all red meat is like $16, $17, $18 a pound nowadays. That's just crazy.
Half a cow, man. Get half a cow, freeze it, and see what that costs next year, man. You're ahead of the game.
We have gone through almost all of our venison.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, there's only so far they can take that shrinkflation or basically product, you know, deterioration or lessening of whatever they're trying to sell. And at the same, in order to not bring prices up, you know, they bring the quality of the product down or the amount of the product down. And, there's a few things that, you know, you just can't bring the quality down anymore until you have to really raise prices. One of those is beef. And so you see, if you look at a price of beef, you can really see the money manipulation there, because it's, that chart is up and to the right. I mean, we're at all time highs for beef prices as well. So, and you know that the farmers and ranchers, and this is one of the things that, a guy called, Texas Slim, and he has a Bitcoin beef, page, and he goes around and, you know, encourages, you know, the ranchers to sell to their local community, instead of going through these giant meat processing facilities and getting local, things. But you know, these giant, in factory farms are just doing everything they can. They're injecting the meat with water in order to, you know, make the weight up. They're every loophole and everything else that you can think of to stop them from just raising their prices and pricing all their customers out of their product. They're doing. And so it's scary to think about when you know the quality of your products are deteriorating as well. So yeah. Go ahead, Manimal.
Yeah, I was just curious. Have you guys ever thought through? So, you know, I think we all understand that this current system is kind of self-destructing at a slower, maybe a faster pace at this point. Have you guys ever thought through if the system currently operates because not enough people have lost confidence in the system, meaning like there's just not enough people, like people on this call obviously understand it, right? But there's just not enough people that quite understand how the system's robbing them, and they haven't lost that confidence, which is why, like, the title of this post or this space is Fiat Preservation. Wouldn't you rather have the system kind of keep itself going so that you can kind of get ready for what the eventual loss of confidence in the system is? Or would you rather everybody just wake up tomorrow and all come to the conclusion that the system is gonna fail, and then the system fails, which it's gonna have to later down the road? Or would you rather have the Fiat Preservation continue going and, you know, kind of get more and more prepared for what I think we all know is the eventuality? I'm just wondering if anybody's ever thought through, like, would I rather have the system keep going so I can get more ready for when it does collapse? Or would I just rather have everybody wake up tomorrow, understand how the system's rigged, and then go through the collapse with at least everybody or enough people understanding?
Yeah, great topic. Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, if I may, I'll say, you don't want it to all happen all at once. And it kind of goes back to the earlier point about why this isn't taught in school, right? Because you'd have an entire generation of kids growing up saying, oh, we know what the trick is. And, you know, a good majority of them would turn the system on its head, which really probably wouldn't be good for, you know, if you ever studied like history, when there's financial collapses or confidence erodes, as you put it, or completely is lost, then you have, you know, societal collapse, right? You have wars, you have riots, kind of order, the cultural order, or the societal order goes away for a time until it can be, you know, rebuilt. And so I guess my preference is, a slow implosion, which means continued steady adoption of freedom money that is Bitcoin. So I think we have some hands, and feel free to call on people, text us, I can't see exactly who was first.
Yeah, Wade was next. Go ahead.
Guys, I think just from my macro perspective, Berkshire Hathaway has more on its books, has more T-bills on its books, more assets on its books than the Federal Reserve does right now. And so I think until you start to see some of that capital rotation, I don't think we see a macro or a structural change. I think you wait to see what Berkshire Hathaway does. I think that's the signal.
Right on. Pubby.
Yeah, you're hitting a great point. Look, the U.S. dollar is here for the longest time possible. They're going to preserve that. You got 184 other fiat currencies tied to it. What you're seeing unfold, and Texas Socialist mentioned it, is you got to stagger this, man. You can't have the full societal collapse. Okay, so what they've done, and they've set this chain in motion probably 50 years ago. And what you're talking about is when you look at the World Economic Forum, and everything begins to me with the lens of the population control. All right. When you start there, little catchphrases, you will own nothing and be happy. And this is where everyone is heading. Okay. This is where how do you control the population? Well, things get so expensive here in the West. Guess what? Would you like three or four children? Yeah. You end up with two or three. Then it's down to one or two. So you're getting priced out of, the population expanding. You push other agendas, right? Gay, lesbian agenda, whatever, less children in the world. You start doing things. You start having vaccines where you control movement of people. Everything is geared towards controlling population, right? And then when you price out people from having healthy food, your proteins, your steak, and what do you force them to eat? A bunch of shit. Now you're weak. You're under control. So this is where it's going. They don't want it to happen all at once. They can't have it a full implosion, but they will stagger it. And that's what you're seeing. So every time you see something come out, and just ask yourself, what agenda is this under? Okay. It'll be something, you're hurting the environment. You're doing this, and it feeds on more control. That's all.
Neil, go ahead.
Yeah. So my answer to Manimal's question. So would I rather it be just get it over with? And I'm in favor of just, I want it done as fast as possible. And my reasoning for that is I don't buy the societal collapse thing, because in 71, we completely collapsed the entire system. And, you know, when they went fiat, that was an instant gold back to nothing backed, and, the whole world didn't collapse. So I don't know why it would, if we magically switched back to sound money, that we would just see this thing collapse and society, economies would fail. Like, people would get hurt. Yeah. But I don't think the thing collapses. I think it just trucks on just like it did in 71, just in the reverse. And my reasoning for why I think it's better. Yes. Would it be better for me personally, if I'm just looking at myself as an individual, if I can stack cheaper stats for longer? It's like, yes. But the thing that I'm not counting, like, if we magically switched to, you know, sound money, Bitcoin standard, well, now I'm accruing value all the time, universally. Like that in and of itself is, I don't even think you could, thing. Like, it's, that is priceless. Like, to be able to have, you know, this quote unquote Bitcoin standard, accepted globally, like, you can't even put, like, the amount, just to think the amount of value created in the world is accruing to everybody. You know, this is like Jeff Booth's, you know, 8 billion for 8 billion or whatever. Like, that's true. Like, right now, all the value that people are creating is getting, you know, siphoned out. Like, we don't get the fruit of our labor. We don't get the rewards because it's being extracted out, you know, for the whole entire globe. So it's just like, you have to think like, okay, well, would the world be more valuable? Would I have a better life, you know, and even looking forward with your children in the future and all that stuff, like how much keep the fruit of the value that we're creating. Like that principled proposition to me, like there is no calculus about whether or not I could stack cheaper stats and I could be better off. Like I want, like fiat needs to die. The central bank needs to go away. That was a con that stupid people, out of ignorance or malice, accepted and fell for. And the buck stops here. Like, I'm not stupid and I'm not evil. So I'm not going to pass this buck, you know, onto my kids. I'm going to stop it. And, I don't know. That's where my head's at. So I think if I could clap my hands, flip the switch and end fiat, I would do it in a heartbeat and I wouldn't think anything of it.
Manimal, go ahead.
Yeah. So I asked a question. My personal belief is it's kind of a catch 22. I actually agree with the sentiment of the last speaker. Like if I had it my way, would I flip the switch? I would, but the problem is, and kind of to answer your question, like why we didn't have the collapse in 71 when we went off the gold centers, because well, they've opened the floodgates of money creation and debt expansion. And that's why society didn't collapse, because now you're flooding the system with more money, right? In this kind of collapse where you're talking about a psychological collapse of confidence, that's a deflationary collapse, which means money gets destroyed out of the system, which means that, you know, you kind of go into a Great Depression type scenario, I think, compared to what they went through in 1971. But again, it's the catch 22, because if we let the system continue to operate the way it's operating, it's a slow burn. And the slow burn is still a burn. Like all the wars that are going on right now that are increasing on a daily, weekly basis, all the conflicts around the world, all of the gap between the upper class and the middle class being destroyed and the lower class, that's all a product of the way the current system operates. So you're still burning just at a slower rate, which also gives the people who run the system more time on their end too, to try and roll out a new system for when this one finally falls apart. So it's like, would you rather give them more time to pull the rug over everybody's eyes again whenever they roll out something new? Or would you rather just flip the switch like the last speaker was saying and just knock it all out like overnight, right? I don't know. I don't really know the answer. Like I said, I think it's catch 22, but I was curious what people thought about it.
Wade, go ahead.
I was actually really kind of bullish with the incoming administration, their position on Bitcoin and at least what they were talking about, cooling off some of the foreign conflicts and whatnot, and getting some of the pressure off of the oil market with the war in Ukraine and whatnot. And I've actually been kind of pretty disappointed on it. I thought that, you know, a couple months ago, we were looking at cooling off the arms shipments to Eastern Europe and getting some of that under control, but I don't see any relaxation of the inflationary pressures, especially with all the continuing armed conflict. And even though we're pivoting here back to the Western Hemisphere per the leaked Department of War memos and whatnot, I still don't see a lot of these hot zones cooling down yet. And that was kind of surprising to me.
No, I mean, that was the sales pitch. We, you know, it was bought hook, line, and sinker. And now that, you know, everything is in full effect and the new administration's in, and we don't really see, we see signaling of change, but you really don't see anything being done, whether it's, you know, ending the wars and Ukraine was going to get ended. How'd that go? Israel was going to, or got the Gaza conflict and, you know, kind of reigning in Israel was gonna happen. Well, we see how that went. We bombed Iran, and it looks like we're kind of gearing up for phase two of that. What else? The Bitcoin stuff. It's like, okay, we got some good market structure. We're going to push stable coins, but, where's the reserve? Oh, it's not really happening. So it's like, you know, all this, in my mind, it was all just a big, it was a marketing scheme because they knew that if they marketed that, they would get the votes. That's exactly what happened. And meanwhile, the powers that be, the power structures, the companies, everything that has brought society to this level, that we're at right now is still in power. So really, you know, it's like a flavor of the same thing. It's like we're still eating slop sandwiches, but now it's like with new improved seasoning. So that's kind of where I see it. And I don't expect it to really get any better without some sort of jarring event, whether that be a black swan or anything like that. But, I mean, it's directionally marketing wise, it sounds correct and everything that everything looked good, but we're not really seeing a lot of action. And I think that's what people are mainly disappointed with.
Yeah, it seems like the only big thing that the administration has done is kept oil prices, gasoline and diesel prices low. And it's a miracle that they've been able to do that. But it, more importantly, it looks like the only thing they were really interested in was ensuring that the rare earth minerals continued to flow from Chinese to the defense sector so we could continue arms shipments to the Europeans. And that looks to me like that was the strategic critical priority. We'll do whatever the Chinese want us to do as long as we can keep production at Raytheon up and keep the arms shipments moving to the Europeans.
Well, yeah, now it looks like we're going to go back to Bagram. Or, you know, it's crazy. It's like I never went to Afghanistan. I had a couple of buddies in my squadron that did. And you know, a lot of them are still in and I'm sure they don't want to go back, but, yeah, that would be the biggest letdown for a lot of veterans specifically to see us go back into that shithole. Especially if we're like paying the Taliban to do it. It's all pretty crazy, but yeah, we'll see. We got about, you know, just a couple minutes left in the show. Bob, I don't know if you want to do closing remarks or we can go around the horn one more time, but I think it was a pretty good show.
Yeah, thanks for joining the protest, guys. Hopefully you can hear me here. But anybody, let's go around the horn. I think it'd be good to hear some final thoughts from people.
All right, I'm going to put people on the spot since there's no hands. Neil, what say you?
Oh man, it was a good space. It's always good to think about new things and just kind of riff. I enjoy it.
Thanks. BFB.
Yeah, it's always good talking shop with you guys. Thanks for hosting the space and just remember you're early. Stay humble. Stack sats.
Roger that. We'll go Wade the Manimal.
Even if you guys or anyone in your family feels that they're late to the Bitcoin adoption curve, it's still sovereign sound money. It's a neutral reserve asset, and that's worth the price alone.
Manimal.
I'll just end by saying everybody here is a warrior on some level, educating people about Bitcoin and how the world is currently setting up to rob them. You're like the new form of warrior, fighting slavery. That's all it comes down to.
Yeah, the war is in your mind.
Keep fighting.
The you know, something that I'm trying to impart on my son, because I didn't get it imparted on me. I needed to go into the military and hold a gun and, you know, do the tough guy shit, you know, to realize that it's not about that. You can learn that in a book. If you apply yourself, you can learn that mentality. In society, you do not need to kill somebody to learn that. So, you know, some people are going to learn it the hard way. They have to. That's just how they're wired. But, you know, we can all kind of embody that warrior mentality and fight for our society and our future and our families. And it doesn't take
It doesn't take, you know, necessarily joining the military or anything, but we can impart as veterans, I think we can impart a lot of that knowledge, onto our peers in the civilian world. So thank you everybody for coming. Thanks, Bob, for hanging in there and stay safe on the road. And, Eric, thank you for producing. We appreciate it. And I don't know, Bob, are you going to be back tomorrow?
Yeah, if you guys can hear me, we'll do it 10 a.m. Eastern. And, yeah, thanks guys. Really in the end, like my final closing thoughts, I guess, if you can hear me is, at some point we got to stop defending Bitcoin and go on the offensive and make other people defend fiat. And that's what this protest is about. So I'd encourage you, ask a lot of good questions and, ask them to defend this system that's out there, because I think that's where we'll win. And whether it's all at once or, gradually, then suddenly, remains to be seen, but we can all do our part to ask good questions, build relationships, help our community, stay positive, but also remember, do not shitcoin. You know the drill. Let's hear the closing music, producer Eric.
Well, it's all